Good morning, Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen. A lot is anticipated to change in the coming year, and not just because of the presidential election. There are other reasons, too. For instance, here in Pennsylvania, recreational marijuana remains illegal. However, they are ramping up efforts. Lawmakers, advocates, even some opponents of the past have spent hours talking about this in Harrisburg, and it looks like it's likely to change, especially since Governor Josh Shapiro seems to be behind it. And joining me is the co-founder of Plant Media Project here in Pittsburgh. She's a native of Pittsburgh and actually a friend, Gina Vensels. I think, Gina, you know more about this subject than anybody I know anywhere.
Well, I appreciate you inviting me on, Larry.
So Paul and I, we've got a couple of questions because obviously, sure, medical marijuana has been in use now for several years. And How many states have legalized recreational use?
There are 25 states that have legalized adult use cannabis, which is another way to say recreational. And that includes our neighbors as well. I mean, we have Ohio, Maryland, Delaware, New York, New Jersey, and Virginia. And we even have medical use in our neighboring West Virginia. So we're getting a lot of pressure because this is happening so close to home.
So we're an island right now. However, the big change may be the governor of Pennsylvania supports this effort. Is that correct?
That is correct. I mean, Governor Shapiro has placed cannabis into the last two budgets. And the intent to file a bill versus actually getting the bill signed and into action are very different. So we hope that maybe this third time will be a charm.
Yeah, Gina, that leads me to my question. I was talking with Larry about this before we got started this morning. I thought, you know, I don't know how many times it's been attempted in Harrisburg, but it just repeatedly fails. And why is that?
Well, the GOP has never supported cannabis legalization in our state. And I think right now, because it's now being reconsidered more around, you know, the impact it can make on us economically. I mean, we can see Pennsylvania, what they're projecting is $2.8 billion in adult-use cannabis sales in the first year of implementing legalization. That could generate as much as $720 million in tax revenue and create upwards of 45,000 jobs for us in the state of PA. So maybe where there are a lot of conservatives that were still thinking about this plant as a recreational drug, we've seen on the federal level it becoming declassified to Schedule 3. We are feeling state by state nationwide that other states so close to home are making these changes, and we could use the revenue here in Pennsylvania. Could we use cannabis to help clean up our potholes or to help our schools or to help our unhoused? There's so much ways that we could use this money to support our neighbors and our community, and I think the time is right for us to make Pennsylvania adult use in 2025.
In your experience, we're with Gina Vensel, co-founder of Plant Media Project. The states that have had this for many years in some cases, how are they handling it and the pushback from people that say they don't want it?
Well, we need data, right? You need to start the program in order to start pulling data to realize a lot of the reasons why folks have said that the plant is dangerous is that, you know, people will have more DUIs and be more recklessly drivers. Well, we have data now in the states where cannabis is legalized that that's not the case. The other is, oh, it's a gateway drug and it'll get into the hands of children. Well, now we have data to show that, you know, if grandma's doing it, maybe the kiddos don't think it's as cool anymore. I don't know, but they're not doing it in the numbers that we expected. So we're having respect for this plant. We're seeing that it is, you know, used in Pennsylvania by over 700,000 medical cannabis patients. So a lot of people in our state are already using this as medicine, but to get into the medical program, it's quite expensive. So being able to allow this plant to become adult use will actually help for more people to get access to this medicine. Whether you call it recreational or not, I believe it is a medicine, and I believe it can help many more people if we create more jobs out of this and create a system where it becomes more affordable for people to get access to cannabis.
Gina, you mentioned reclassification of marijuana at the federal level. Where does that stand right now?
So right now we're very close. I mean, we would, President-elect Trump would have to, you know, take it across the line. But last April, I'm on the board for Students for Sensible Drug Policy, which is the largest youth-led organization to fight the war on drugs. And we were a part of the largest bipartisan coalition in history. We went to D.C. last April. We hit every single member of Congress. We, as both sides of the aisle, came together for three things: to declassify cannabis, to release all cannabis prisoners, and to expunge all cannabis-related records. We did a really great job because 2 weeks later, President Biden said, okay, let's declassify this as Schedule 3, which means that, you know, when a drug is classified Schedule 1, it means that it has, you know, no medical cases and it has strong use of abuse. By declassifying it to level 3 allows us to do the research that we need, but it's still not justice. In the state of Pennsylvania, we have seen there have been 12,000 people arrested for cannabis possession here in the Keystone State just this last year. So even though we have all these medical patients, we're still throwing people in jail over the same plant. And so we need to make these changes so that we can protect our citizens. And it's going to happen nationwide, and we don't want our state to be left behind.
Gina, where can people learn more about this effort and help you support it?
Well, to learn more about what I do, you can visit plantmediaproject.com. But I feel that if you're really interested in getting active, even here locally, we have a Students for Sensible Drug Policy Pittsburgh community chapter. So anyone, whether you're a student or not, is welcome to join that. So you can learn more at ssdp.org. And if you're looking for updated daily news, check out marijuanamoment.com, which had Pennsylvania's cannabis legalization as the headline to today's newsletter.
Perfect timing. Gina Venzel, co-founder of Plant Media Project. Appreciate your time and your passion. I can tell.
Oh, I'm very passionate about this. There's a lot of people making money over this plant, yet still many people sitting behind bars. And we need to create a system that can free all of the people of these expungements and allow this plant to be used medicinally for the people that need it most. Thank you always for having me on the show, Larry.
All right, Gina.
You know, Larry, one time in Kentucky, I was told marijuana was the state's largest cash crop off the books.
Well, let's be honest. People are using it recreationally, or adult use, it's a matter of semantics. But you know, around here, I'm not saying in the building here, I'm saying around town.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's funny. We walked out of a concert and somebody goes, I smell the devil's lettuce burning. For one night only, our Odyssey Pittsburgh stations, all five, which includes 93.7 The Fan, our sports talk station, Y108 Country, 100.7 Star with popular current music, and then WAMO, hip hop and R&B, and of course KDKA at Mike's Beer Bar tomorrow night, the biggest Christmas karaoke spot on the North Shore, maybe on the planet. So many of our on-air hosts and local celebrities are going to take to the mic for karaoke to support Light of Life Rescue Mission, brought to you by Monster Brewing High Life. So, we don't have the complete list of entertainment yet, but I can tell you, Paul, it's very strong. Perhaps a bit too strong.
Really?
I don't know. So, Mike Tomlin yesterday, you know, he talked about, because normally Tuesdays at noon are when Coach would normally talk to the media, but since the Steelers have to play on Saturday.
That is the standard time for Tomlinisms.
Right. So yesterday, one of the biggest questions is, after the loss in Philadelphia, was, what about T.J. Watt?
T.J. Watt, I just saw him walking around rather comfortably, but again, he's questionable with his ankle. We'll see where the roads lead us.
And then you had talked about, is this a situation where you've clinched a playoff berth? Do you start resting guys? Coach would have none of that.
Balance the decision to play players or not play players when it comes to injuries at this time of the year, where maybe earlier in the season you might not want a small problem turn into a big problem, but you also have a division championship on the line this week.
As I mentioned, you know, we're playing for a division title this week. Those that are healthy will play.
So there you go. Yeah, the division is at stake on Saturday. Steelers win, they clinch the division, which would be a big feather in their cap and a chance for maybe to get a good position as they go into the playoffs rather than be road warriors.
And then the question becomes after that, when Baltimore's in the rearview mirror, then we play the Chiefs on Christmas Day with or without Patrick Mahomes. That's the question. He's like, I guess, week to week right now, and it's not certain that he'll be playing against Houston.
He's got a high ankle sprain. If you know anything about that, apparently it's very painful, and it takes a while. I think he's had this before, but he's played through it in the playoffs. Remember that when he was...
I do.
He was hobbled to the point where it didn't look like... It looked like that movie Misery.
He was kind of like hopping around.
Right.
Yeah.
After she clunked him on the ankle with the... with the mallet.
Wow, that is an unforgettable... You can't unsee that movie scene. Just, wow.
Let me see. I got it. It's funny. The weird things I save. Let's see if Misery comes out.
Oh, no.
No.
Yeah.
Fortunately for you.
Thankfully.
The audience,
yeah. Please don't make me relive that awful, horrible
sledgehammer. Anyway, yes, the game is just a week from tomorrow.
Mm.
And they got to play, you know, privately. I know what they're saying, but this three-game stretch where they're on the road in Philly, then 6 days later in Baltimore, then 4 days later facing the Chiefs at home.
And that's a 1 o'clock game on Christmas Day, right?
Yes.
So 1 o'clock, I'm going to be in the air, probably mountain time, maybe Pacific time at kickoff. I might get to see the first quarter or so on the aircraft.
I want to meet the masochist from the league that sets the schedules and thought, oh, this will be a good idea.
We're not the only team that has to play like three games in a 10-day span. It's ridiculous, to me at least, when you're talking about player safety.
Come on, man.
Already a tough enough sport to play without that problem.
I mean, that is a brutal stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they can snag this game. If they win this game and win the division, then they're just playing for a little better position against, you know, both Kansas City, and then they play Cincinnati again.
But as things stand right now, I guess it would be Buffalo that would have the bye and the home field advantage, right?
I just don't want to play Buffalo again.
No.
Tatanka. I don't want to go to Buffalo.
No.
No. And that snow and all that. Remember that playoff game last? We didn't have TJ Watt. Let's just get the win this weekend, and then we'll... what would Mike Tomlin say? We'll let the week reveal itself.
Right.
Hopefully none of the fans reveal themselves. Seen that before. 8:25 at KDK.
Well, you know what happens? They get that liquid courage.
You. Yeah, one of them was, what was it, Kelsey's brother up there at Buffalo in the Steeler playoff game. He had his shirt off and was chugging beers.
People jumping onto tables in the parking
lot. What is that all about?
I don't know, but they sure like it.
This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen. A lot going on. And yesterday, President-elect Donald Trump spoke for about an hour on a number of subjects. And one of those was about the drones that everybody's been talking about, mainly over New Jersey and New York. And he told the press gathered there.
People have a big distance. The government knows what is happening. Look. Our military knows where they took off from. If it's a garage, they can go right into that garage. They know where it came from and where it went.
Donald Trump, and joining us from CBS military analyst, retired Army Colonel Jeff McCausland. Colonel, good morning.
Larry, good morning to you.
Let's start there. Military would know what these drones are. What's the speculation in your circle?
Well, the speculation I would have is they certainly have the capabilities to monitor these things if they were focusing, but the military primarily focuses its attention outside the United States as opposed to inside the United States. So Mr. Trump certainly is receiving a classified briefing every day. Frankly, I think it was a bit reckless by him to say that, because all he is doing in many ways is contributing to the paranoia by a lot of Americans as this unfolds, number one. And the conspiracy theories that are obviously going to follow that. And number three, once again, undermining people's faith in institutions. The government so far has said that they're uncertain how this is all occurring, HLS, FBI, DOD, et cetera. So there should be every effort for them to reveal it once they know what's going on, that's for sure. But I just think, you know, trying to contribute to conspiracy theories, paranoia, people's concern at the moment may not be the best path.
And that said, Donald Trump also spoke about trying to find a resolution with Ukraine and Russia. And as you know, there's a major development in Russia with a bomb that exploded.
Yeah, that's exactly right. A bomb went off in a downtown area in Moscow, killing a lieutenant general by the name of Igor Kirillov. Kirillov was the chief of the Russian Nuclear Chemical Biological Protection Troops. Well, that sounds very defensive. He was also responsible, I'm sure, for the employment of chemical weapons, in particular in offensive operations. And he had just been indicted yesterday in absentia by Ukrainian prosecutors for employing chemical weapons in Ukraine, most notably what we would call riot control agents, CSCN gas, against Ukrainian troops on the front line. And then this morning, or in the aftermath, a scooter with about 300 grams of explosives was detonated outside his apartment as he walked out with an aide, killing the general on the spot.
Colonel McCausland, Paul Rasmussen here. I understand a Ukrainian source is saying that their Secret Service is behind this assassination.
Formally, Ukraine as a government has not taken responsibility for this assassination, but Paul, you're quite right. Privately, the SBU and Ukrainian intelligence services have acknowledged that they, in fact, did this. This is not the first assassination that has been laid at the doorstep of Ukrainian intelligence. There was the assassination of the commander of Russian the Naval Brigade down in Crimea was assassinated. There was a very well-known Russian mill blogger killed about a year ago. So there have been these type of assassinations conducted most likely by the Ukrainians. It seems to me holding senior people responsible is part of their goal, number one. Number two, trying to bring the war more and more to the Russian people, because the average Russian walking down the street in Moscow these days, the war in Ukraine is at a great distance. It's remote. It doesn't affect me. Boom, all of a sudden, explosion occurs down the street from your apartment, and this particular war now has come a bit to Moscow's doorstep.
We're with Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst. That said, what relationship will Donald Trump have with Vladimir Putin, and do you think he'll be able to unwind this war in Ukraine?
Well, he has boasted for, you know, the better part of the campaign he could end the war in one day. I think, and others are somewhat skeptical about that. The only way you can end the war in one day is for one side or the other to surrender. I doubt the Russians are going to, so that would mean forcing the Ukrainians to surrender. He has also said frequently that he has a good relationship with Vladimir Putin, and as a consequence can deal with him. There have been various proposals put out by members of his staff, most notably a guy named Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, retired general officer, who has been named Mr. Trump's primary envoy for Ukrainian negotiations. And Kellogg had written some things several months ago, in essence, exchanging a territory on the Ukrainian side for some type of a ceasefire and peace settlement. So we might just freeze the lines right where they're at. Russians have kind of rejected that, saying beyond that, they need, you know, the removal of the current Ukrainian government. They need formal limitations on the size Ukrainian forces could have in the aftermath. They need a formal denunciation by Ukraine and NATO that Ukraine would not be allowed to join NATO. And they've even, Putin at times has said that Ukraine must adopt the Russian language, a whole bunch of Russian history, Russian cultural icons, as part and parcel of that settlement. So at least publicly, the two sides seem far apart. Can Mr. Trump get him to the table? Remains to be seen after January 20th.
You know, Colonel, it seems to me that there is some leverage here for the negotiators on the behalf of the United Nations and the U.S. in that both of these countries have been through a slog, and surely they want to end the fighting.
Well, we think so. I mean, on the Russian side, United Kingdom intelligence services have publicly said they believe the Russians have suffered 700,000 casualties. That's dead, wounded, missing, captured, disappeared. Probably 100,000 of those are, in fact, dead. They are now having to employ North Koreans on the battlefield for the Russia because they're short manpower. There were also seen indications of the strain on the Russian economy. Russian interest rates right now, 21%, inflation rates about 9%, shortages of labor as people are moving to defense industries, moving away from civil industries. But that being said, it does appear to me, at least, Mr. Putin continues to be determined. This is an existential event for him that he has to prove some kind of success. On the Ukrainian side, certainly Mr. Trump could cut off all military aid to Ukraine. That's certainly one thing he could do. And the Biden administration in the last couple of weeks has done three tranches of additional military aid to the tune of about $1.5 to $2 billion worth of aid, trying to get that to the Ukrainians prior to January 20th. It seems to me, frankly, unlikely the Europeans can fill that type of shortfall in terms of additional aid. So the Ukrainians could be pretty short if, in fact, that comes to fruition. And certain indications that the Ukrainians are willing to negotiate, but that may also, frankly, be posturing in that, you know, trying to demonstrate to the international community, we, Ukraine, are willing to negotiate. It's the Russians who are not willing to negotiate, in hopes that perhaps if the Russians do turn down a negotiation, then Mr. Trump will not end military aid.
Well, and we didn't even have a chance to talk about Assad's ouster in Syria and the Middle East. A lot on the plate for foreign policy for President-elect Donald Trump in this country. Colonel, always appreciate your time and input, and Merry Christmas and better New Year.
Larry, always a pleasure to be with you, and have a happy holiday.
Outstanding. Colonel Jeff McCausland, who's been military analyst for CBS for 20-plus years.
His knowledge of these topics, Larry, is encyclopedic.
It is. He's been all over the world. He's served our country in so many different capacities. And, yeah, he's maybe one of the best in the country to kind of sort it out for the rest of us. This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with Paul Rasmussen, our anchorman. Coming up right after your report, Paul, at the top of this hour, the ACC Player of the Year for volleyball from the University of Pittsburgh sophomore Olivia Babcock, who is part of the team ranked number one and going into their fourth consecutive Final Four appearance.
She is a star. Watching her and the team play last time around against Oregon was a thrill. I didn't get to see the Kentucky match, but I think they have the talent again this year to close the deal, and I hope they do win a national title because they worked so hard for it.
She is an incredible talent. When we talk to her, share some of her background and how she got to Pittsburgh, and they're playing Thursday night at 6:30 in Louisville against the Cardinals, and then Nebraska and Penn State will play. So there is a possibility of a Pitt-Penn State final for the national championship.
How about that?
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
All right. Meanwhile, one of our colleagues, we just had David Johnson, who spent 40 years at WPXI-TV. He retired officially last Friday, and now we're adding another name to the list.
Yes, the reporter of renown. I mean, this is one of the best journalists, television journalists in the city of Pittsburgh. Bob Mayo on X just a few minutes ago announced that he's going to be retiring as of December 31st. And what I did not know about Bob was he started his career at KQV, went to 3WS. 3WS had quite a news department back in the day.
They did.
And then you worked with him briefly at WTAE Radio.
I remember.
And then he started at Channel 4 in 1994. 30 years on the air in Pittsburgh television and many, many decades as a reporter here. Bob Mayo, he retires at the end of the year.
Way to go, Bob.
Well done.